So welcome everyone. It's a privilege and an honor to be here today. I want to start by telling you a little bit of the history of this lecture. About 5 years ago, and unfortunately still the conversation is going on in the Frum community, it was perhaps the height of the discussion regarding Half Shabbos. And people were talking a lot about teenagers texting on Shabbos and teenagers getting lost in the mix. And I was contacted by NCSY, and they said to me, is there any way you could talk about the calm before the storm? The storm being high school students. And is there any way that perhaps you could talk about middle school students, since you have so many years of working with middle school students? Is it possible for you to come and talk about the calm before the storm? And when I heard about it, I was actually reached out by Rabbi Yaakov Glasser, who's now the dean of the CJF. And he said to me, when he said it to me, I said, to be honest, and I chuckled, I said, if anyone's going to call adolescents, middle school years, the calm before the storm, then they're really missing the boat. I said, if we really want to talk about infusing spirituality and developing an atmosphere for connectivity for children, what we really need to talk about is the years before that. We really need to talk about the children between the ages of 3 and 10 and what we can do for those children before we get to the point of truly adolescence. And I'll be handing that out in a second. True adolescence and the teenage years. So I chose to name this topic, preparing elementary school students for a life of religious connectivity, specifically use those terms, and tefillah. And what my goal for today is to provide you with a global insight and also some practical day-to-day suggestions about how to promote connectivity. So I asked you to write down, how do you define religious connectivity, and put that in quotes, which frequently people refer to as spirituality. What does that mean when you hear that term? Who wants to share? What does that mean? What did you write down when you thought about spirituality or religious connectivity? What were you thinking? Wait, Mandel? Okay.
Trying to live a life through the prism of Torah.
Okay. Very good. Good. Anyone else? Any other volunteers? Mom? Thank you. My mother decided to drive up from Maryland to...
Beautiful. Your personal connection.
She can give this workshop.
Your personal connection.
Okay. Good.
The session, yes. Session is now beginning. And thinking about the show.
Very good. Very good. So there's a lot of things. There are a lot of definitions. And I'm actually going to just show you briefly. I went online to look at Wikipedia, looking on Webster. What's out there? How do they define spirituality? And the reality is, when you go through the litany of websites and you go through the litany of books, you come up with so many different terms. And I think it really just leaves you with a big question. How do we infuse spirituality? How do we create religious connectivity for our children? How do we begin to prepare our children for religious connectivity? And I think really the basic idea, the basic concept that we have to understand is, first, we must understand our children. In order to create that atmosphere for our children, first we have to get to the core of our children. We really have to understand what our children are all about. And that brings me to my handout. Thank you very much. You know, a number of years ago, and this goes back to the 1980s, there was a professor in Harvard University, Dr. Howard Gardner. And Dr. Gardner published many articles, series of articles, book on multiple intelligences. And his overarching goal was, he was trying to solve a problem that exists in the world. And what he pointed out was, is that when you look in the world, at the world, people view children and test people through an IQ test. And that alone seems to define who a person is. And what he said was that is so limiting. Is that that's such a narrow part of our world. The reality is that there are multiple intelligences. And when you really look at a person, to really understand a person, you have to be able to understand there are many different aspects and many different facets. He said, if you look at the first page of the handout that I gave you, he said the reality is our world focuses primarily on verbal linguistic intelligence and logical or mathematical intelligence. And if you look at who's successful in the world, those are pretty much the careers that people focus on. But when we understand our children and we want to connect them to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, this is really the answer right here. It's because if we understand our child's intelligence and each one is different, then we can create an atmosphere for our children to really connect and relate to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the reality is, as I just mentioned, that it's not just limited to spirituality, but that's the reality between those people who are successful in their real lives and those people who unfortunately are not successful. The people who are truly successful and happy in their careers are those people who understand themselves and choose a career that is linked to their intelligence. And those people, many, many articles written about this, and those people who unfortunately suffer in their careers, or God forbid, suffer from their from depression, are those who are devoid of understanding who they really are and connecting professionally to really where their strengths are. Rabbi Sacks just mentioned, he was talking about the ultimate, or one of the ways to connect our children. And he pointed out that there are many ways to do it, but one of the things that he mentioned is that sometimes we're too focused on the brain, the mind. But what's the ultimate spiritual experience? What's the ultimate opportunity for connectivity? Is when you're able to link the mind and the emotions, the heart, to whatever you're doing. And that's where, regarding our children, that's ultimately how we're going to achieve that. So now if you flip your page over and you look on the back, Jewish life has been set up in a way where we can have the opportunity to really connect our children in so many different ways. How do we do that? We really just have to look at our life cycle. There are so many events on the Jewish calendar that allows us in many different ways to link our children. As I mentioned from the top two, sometimes, and even in our educational circles, we focus so much on the verbal, linguistic, or the logical, mathematical students, person who's in the top math class, a person who's in the top Gemara chair. That's really where, unfortunately, too much attention is being spent. But what about that kid who's very labedic? What about that kid who, the second music comes on, he's jumping out of his seat? What does that tell us? That tells us that's where that child's intelligence is. He's got the musical intelligence. He's got the kinesthetic intelligence. So what do we do for that child? Well, we have to look at our life cycle. We have to look at the cycle of the year, and we have to capitalize on that event. If you have that child who has ants in his pants, then you know that Simchas Torah is an opportunity to really succeed with that child. You have to think, when you come to the table on Friday night, don't just sit at the table and sing Shalom Aleichem. Get the whole family, grab everyone's hands and dance around the table. That's how you connect with that child. That's how you inspire that child. That's how you take that child to the next level. We have some children, our children, talk about getting to know your child. We have that child who, you know, when he's 3, 4, 5 years old, he can't wait to get outside and to take that little shovel and to dig. Why? Because that he has a naturalistic intelligence. He appreciates nature. He appreciates the dirt. So that's the type of child that taking them on a hike, getting them out and exposing them to Marabu Ma'atzecha Hashem, that type of child, you have the ability to connect them in that way. But how do we do this? How do we accomplish this? It comes from spending time with our children, getting to know them. Right? This famous vort, right? That there are, why there are so many different panim? Because the panim is different. The face is different. Each child is different. And therefore we have to understand our children and look at our children and see which one of these nine things really connects and allows our children to thrive. Now, one thing I should point out, and I hope that you realize this already, the reality is no children are limited to one item. Most children have many different intelligences. It could be 5, it could be 6, it could be 4. But by spending time with our children, we start to understand what excites them, what attracts them, what interests them, and then we have to look at our yearly cycle as we go through the events during the year and do our best to expose them to those moments. Take advantage of those opportunities. You know, there once upon a time, or I would say even today, people do the same thing. They say, oh, you know how you really inspire children? Oh, kalmach, or, you know, certain type of, you know, very slow and soothing music. That is true. That's true for some. For others, no, it's the more lively music. It's different opportunities. But the more we understand our children, the more we understand their intelligence, the greater chance we have of connecting them and allowing them to thrive. But there's one other piece. I asked you in the beginning of the session, I asked you, what inspired you? Or what turned you on to Yiddishkeit? Why did I ask you that question? Because the answer is, they're your genes. They're your children. You have to know what worked for you. Because chances are, in most cases, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. So you need to look at yourself. You need to look at your spouse. And you need to talk about it and say, well, what worked? And to identify it. And that will also help your children grow. There's a famous Gemara that talks about when you decide to marry a girl or engage a girl, that one of the things you're supposed to do is you're supposed to look at her brothers. And get a sense of her brothers. Why? Same idea. Because it's in the genes. It's in the family. Not every child's exactly the same as their parents. But pretty much most children we can say, oh, he reminds me of so-and-so. Speak to that person too. Find out from that person what worked. When a mother says, oh, he reminds me of my brother. There's an advantage to that. Because then you can go to that brother and say, what worked for you? What type of chinuch? What type of experience? What type of environment worked for you? These are all ingredients. These are all ingredients that help us understand one of the very basic principles, a global insight into helping our children thrive and grow in religious connectivity. I had mentioned that not only do I want to provide you with a global insight, multiple intelligences and how that affects connectivity. But I also want to talk to you about some practical day-to-day suggestions. Things that could be used in the home, in the school, in the environment around us in order for our children, in order to help meet their religious needs. So since we're in the season, I felt it was fair to use an example from sports, for the area of football, that ultimately, in order to be successful on a day-to-day basis with our children, we need to have a strong offense and a strong defense. And what I mean by that is, any great offense is one that runs a show, that's proactive, that leads. And with our children, that's the same thing. When it comes to their spiritual needs, when it comes to connectivity, we have to be proactive. We have to be thinking ahead. So I mentioned the idea of understanding your child's development, multiple intelligences. What allows that child to tick? What allows that child to thrive? That's 1A, perhaps. 1B is our role. Is what are we doing? How are we living our lives? Just as important as it is to understand our child and what allows that child to thrive, we also have to look at ourselves and what are we doing? Are we walking the walk, right? Are we doing exactly following what we preach in terms of learning Torah and keeping mitzvot and davening? Because end of the day, that's most probably the greatest roshem that we'll have on our children. Something that I think is terribly overlooked is the way we speak. Because when we're talking to our children, especially elementary school children, those who are extremely influential, something that we don't realize is when we talk about a Kadosh Baruch Hu, we create an atmosphere where our children start to recognize a Kadosh Baruch Hu in their lives. You know, when a child comes to you and says, Mommy, Abba, I want to go to so-and-so's house, and you say, Emir Hashem in 5 minutes, what does a Kadosh Baruch Hu have to do with that? The reality is we're teaching them at a very young age, Kadosh Baruch Hu has to do with everything. Because of what's happening. And so by at a very young age, saying things like Baruch Hashem and Emir Hashem and Be'ezer Hashem, we're teaching our children, we're infusing in them, we're putting inside them, in their minds, in their hearts, the idea that a Kadosh Baruch Hu is a part of our every single day. We live in a world of happenstance. It is what it is. But we know that that's not true. And when we're working with our children, the expectation is that we talk that way and we explain to them through our actions, through our deeds, and through our words that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a part of our every single day. When you get married, there's a partnership. And the reality is we know in every single home, we have different schedules. Sometimes one spouse, usually, is home a lot often, more often than the other. Or one spouse has one experience with a child, another spouse has another experience with a child. It's so important for parents to talk. To find even that 5 minutes. My wife, who's also here. My wife and I use the time every single morning on the way to work. Because of our crazy schedules, we use that time every single morning to talk. We have to be able to see the full picture when it comes to our children. The full picture is what one parent might see at home, what one parent may see at a parent-child learning session, what one parent may see when watching the kids play in the backyard. All of this information is valuable in allowing our children to grow and to develop. But it's about being proactive. And along those lines of being proactive, this is something that's very near and dear to me as an educator. In RY&J, we always ask our rebbeim, our morors, our teachers to reach out to parents at the beginning of the school year. Make the connection early. Make that call. But I think as parents, we also have to understand the reality that most educators that we're talking to are dealing with 70, 80, sometimes even over 100 students a day. By us taking that opportunity to reach out to them and to make that partnership for them with them. Because just like our spouse may see our children in one setting, the educators do too. By taking the time and picking up the phone or sending that email and communicating, we have that opportunity to find out more information, to create more of an opportunity for our children to grow before, God forbid, there are any issues. Rabbi Sachs mentioned today the value of music, and I can't understate that. I'm not a Kabbalist, so I can't tell you the impact that music has on the soul, but there's no question. There's no question that what our children listen to, the tone of that music, allows our children to soar. I always think that, especially when kids are young, there's a tremendous value to hearing Shalshelis or Devekis or some of those journey songs. Those are the things that not only, as we said before, get the heart going, but also allow the mind to expand. Jewish music has a tremendous impact on children. And as I mentioned before, I grew up in a home where 613 Torah Avenue was a regular. Ruach, you go really, really back, but that was a record we heard in the house all the time. Jewish music has tremendous impact on the soul, on the neshama, and therefore that's also a method, a way that we can be proactive to allow our children to grow and to develop. The worst thing that we could possibly do for our children is allow them to be robots. There's so many things that we do in our life, and we do them because, well, that's what our parents did, that's what our grandparents did. But when we have an understanding of what we do, and we take the time to explain it to our children, there's more meaning. It's chaval, it's sad. When children don't know, well, why is it? Why is it in our home that we sit or stand for Kiddush? How come when I go to his house, he stands, and in our house, we sit? What's the reason for that? Or kids come to shul, and we go up on our toes. Why? If they're not told, if they're not instructed, we're sitting right there at the Shabbos table with them. We have that opportunity. You know, I always joke about the example of, you know, you ask children, well, why do we cover the challah? And most of them say, well, we don't want to embarrass the challah because we're making Kiddush. So that was great when they were five. And developmentally, that's the right answer when they were five. Hopefully about being kind and being nice and not embarrassing people and watch what you say, all of those things. But when a fifth grader or a sixth grader or a seventh grader, that's their answer, then we're realizing we're not doing them justice. We're not really providing them with what they need. So we need to be thinking about, what do we do and why do we do it? Every time we come to the Shabbos table, every time we take our children to shul, it's an opportunity to explain to them, to enlighten them on why we do what we do. And finally, and incredibly important, it's important to discuss with our children what's important to us. Why am I involved in Tomchei Shabbos? Why am I involved in helping children from the special needs background? Why? Why do I involve myself in those things? When we explain to our children and we talk to our children about what we're doing, those are the things that allow them to connect. Those are the things that truly inspire them and allow them to flourish in life. And just like any good team has a great offense, you have to have a solid defense. But what does that mean? What does it mean to have a solid defense? So in my opinion, it means moderation. Having a solid defense means moderation. Because nothing in life is truly black and white. I love telling this story, and this story goes back to when I first started in education a number of years ago. I came to the table for lunch, I think it was really one of the first days in school, as a rookie teacher. And I sat down in the lunchroom with a bunch of teachers. And I took out my lunch and I started eating. And one of the teachers looked at me and said, "What are you doing?" I said, "I'm eating my sandwich." "You can't eat that!" "What do you mean?" "I've always had peanut butter and jelly. That's my favorite sandwich." "You can't eat peanut butter and jelly in school?" I will never forget that moment. Now, why anyone didn't tell me that before I walked in the school is another discussion. But why was that such an important moment? Because 20 years before that, I walked into school with a peanut butter and jelly sandwich almost every single day. And what that taught me is that sometimes we excuse things and say, "Oh, we did this when we were kids." The reality is, it's a different world. It's a very, very different world. And we can never walk into a situation with our children and assume, "Oh, we did this when we were kids." Because they're dealing with different things. They're dealing with different experiences. They're dealing with different devices. And therefore, we have to have a certain sense of caution, a certain sense of awareness. What was okay back then may not necessarily be okay bizman hazeh. So when we talk about being creating that solid defense, we have to think about what I call the peanut allergy reality. Is that things have changed, and what was okay when we were kids may not be okay today. It's kind of ironic that the next thing I want to talk about is sports obsessions, considering what I put on the screen so far. And for those people in this room who know me, it's very ironic that I'm using sports, writing sports obsession as an example of moderation. But the reality is there's a need. There's a need. Because that has changed too. I remember years ago someone saying to me, he was talking to his son who was learning in Eretz Yisrael. And we're just talking about a number of different things. And his son, who grew up in the New York area, said to him, "Oh, Abba, by the way, how's the tight end on the Oakland Raiders? How's he doing?" So his father said, "What do you care? You grew up in New York. You're a Giants fan. What do you care about the tight end in the Oakland Raiders?" And he says, "Oh, well, my fantasy team, and I'm tracking this, and I'm tracking that." We have to be very, very aware that that has changed for our children too. Now, growing up in the Washington, D.C. area, it was all about the Redskins. I knew everything about the Washington Redskins. No one really cared about basketball. Certainly nobody cared about hockey. It was all about the Washington Redskins, and I knew everything about the Washington Redskins. But I had no idea what the tight end of the Oakland Raiders was doing. But our children have so many things at the tip of their hands. So many possible distractions. How are they going to soar in Gemara? How are they going to excel in Chumash if they have so many different things going through their head? Believe me, I'm not saying that they shouldn't follow sports. Believe me. But what I am saying is there's a value to moderation. There's a value to understand what they're really being exposed to, because that's also not the same of what we experienced when we were kids. And that brings us to the next topic when it comes to technology. Technology is so... And therefore, we have to have a game plan for that. We truly have to have a game plan in terms of time limits. There have to be times where children can go on and where children cannot go on. Filters. In my house, we have, for each one of our children, they have their own login. So to get onto a computer, they have to actually use the login, which has time limits, is monitored for certain things. And finally, and this is something I tell parents in my yeshiva as well, is a nightly tech collection. Kids have smartphones. They have so many different gadgets. And one of the reasons why especially high schoolers are suffering is because they're on those devices all night, right? The fear of being left out is such a major impact for them. That's honestly where a big part of the Half Shabbos discussion is. They're so nervous about missing out on the latest. But we have to help them by training them, helping understand what are the appropriate times for this. And one of the ways to do it is keep all the chargers in the parent's bedroom. And every single night, depending on what the time limit is for the child, depending on the child's age, collecting all of those devices and putting them away every single night. That applies to what's on the iPad and certainly in terms of TV. A piece that I don't think many parents think about, which I think is extremely valuable. I did this in my own yeshiva a couple of years ago, started this a couple of years ago with fourth and fifth grade parents, was I encouraged parents to get together and to meet. Because in that case, we were talking about technology. But I said the reality is there's so many different things that come up. What are we going to do, right? We always suffer as parents when we want a certain standard for our children, but the next person allows their children to do whatever they want. It's very, very hard to raise our children when the person next door, there are no limits. But usually, and in most cases, the people that we're working with are our peers. They're our friends. So we encourage our children. I encourage parents to reach out to their peers, to have discussions with their friends about, let's talk about Big Day Shabbos. Let's talk about what's appropriate. In some communities unfortunately, fortunately, however you want to term it, you have kids walking around in Shabbos afternoon like they do during the weekday. Is that something we want to do? But if we get into that discussion when they're 7 years old or 8 years old, certainly we have a better chance of winning that battle when they're 12 and 13 and 14 and beyond. But having parents get together and reaching out to your close friends and talking about these things when they're younger, when they're in third and fourth and fifth grade, gives us a heads up, an opportunity to really grow and help our children thrive. And that goes back to the topic of environment. There's a famous Talmud Yerushalmi about Rabbi Yeshua ben Hananya. And the Gemara tells us, Rabbi Dosef ben Hyrcanus tells us that Rabbi Yeshua, and Rabbi Yeshua was an infant, his mother would bring his cradle into the Beis Medrash so that his ears would become accustomed to the words of Torah. Now, I'm certainly not advising people to bring their infants into the YU Beis Medrash and allow the baby to cry in the corner. But ultimately, I'm sure you understand where I'm going with this. There's a tremendous value in what we expose our children to and the environments we put our children in. Our children are products of their environments. And therefore, the schools that we choose, the types of shuls that we go to, if our children are walking, which I'm going to talk about in a second, if our children are walking into shuls where people are standing in the back and texting during the week, or they're talking throughout the course of davening, what impact does that have on our children? So we have to think about the environment. We have to think about where we place our children in order for them to really grow and to develop. And that really brings us to the topic of tefillah and davening. So what do we tell our children about davening? The school psychologist in my yeshiva, Dr. Jonathan Froelich, once told me something which has stuck with me for many, many years. And he said that when children, as children relate to their parents, there's a God complex. Because when I'm an infant and I'm crying, all of a sudden you come and you provide me with that bottle. You provide me with that pacifier. And everything that I could possibly want, you give me. I'm crying, you pick me up. Anything that I could possibly need, you're there for me. Now as the kids get a little older, and the needs and the demands grow a little bit, then they start to realize that we're not so perfect. But the reality is that our children, when they think of God, they think that's all it is. Is I daven? And the answer should be yes. It's very important when we start to introduce tefillah to our children that we have to explain to them there are multiple answers that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us. There are times where HaKadosh Baruch Hu says yes. There are times where HaKadosh Baruch Hu says no, and there are times where HaKadosh Baruch Hu says not yet or not right now. You know, if my 10-year-old comes to me, who's a very Levitic child, and says, you know, Abba, a very confident child, says, you know what, Abba, I can drive your car. Just give me the keys, I'll show you. Right? Maybe I'll trust him, maybe I won't. But the reality is, I have to understand that for him, it's not yet. This is not the time for him to drive. This is not the appropriate time. And that's something we have to teach our children when it comes to davening, when we first expose them to davening. Is that you're going to be davening, you're going to be saying tefillos, you're going to be talking, you're asking HaKadosh Baruch Hu for a number of things. Understand that HaKadosh Baruch Hu answers us in many different ways. And this also helps our children, Rachmana Litzlan, if someone's sick, if they're davening for someone who's near and dear to them, and unfortunately that person passes away. So they say, oh, I davened Hashem and it was such a waste of time. That's not really the answer. The answer is sometimes HaKadosh Baruch Hu says yes, sometimes HaKadosh Baruch Hu says no, and sometimes HaKadosh Baruch Hu says this is not the right time. It's also important to teach our children the power of just saying words. I came up with this mashal a number of years ago, and honestly, this is a story I tell the kindergartners in RYJ every year. This is a story I tell them when I give them their sitter for the first time. And I tell them, by using a mashal of puzzles, I tell them that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created a world full of puzzles. There are some puzzles that are 10 pieces. There are some puzzles that are 50 pieces. There are some puzzles that are 1,000 pieces. And what we're handing you right now, Your sinner is your puzzle piece. But what you must understand is that Kadosh Baruch Hu created a world of Kol Yisrael Arevim Zeh Bazeh. That we're all intertwined. And what that means is that when we daven, we may be thinking, oh, I'm davening for this person, my relative. But the reality is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has his scheme. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu decides where that tefillah is going to go. Sometimes you're a part of that puzzle of 10 pieces. But sometimes HaKadosh Baruch Hu decides in his infinite wisdom that your piece is a part of a puzzle of 1,000 pieces. But you know what? Imagine you were putting together a puzzle of 1,000 pieces, and when you were done, you're missing one piece. Because one person didn't offer their puzzle piece. The most important thing that you could do when it comes to davening and educating children is the value of just saying the words, putting your piece down. We see those puzzles that toddlers put together, right? It's very easy. Very easy to slide that piece in. There are situations like that. But it's important to help them understand that just saying the words makes a difference. There are times, I can think of stories in my own head right now, of situations which were so dire, so complicated, and the next thing you turn around and you hear that that situation was solved. How did that happen? The answer is because all the Jews who had a piece of that puzzle offered their piece. So we should stress with our children the value of putting their piece and just saying the words. And then, of course, taking your time. When we're dealing with children this age, this is the time for them to truly daven. We all know as adults we're always rushing to catch a bus, to get to work. There's so many things going on in our life. Got 5 minutes to say a mincha, right? Especially if we're home and dealing with young children. It's hard. But with our own children who have time, it's important to put them in an environment where they could actually take the time to daven and learn how to say the words. So when is the best time to start going to shul? When should children be exposed to shul? So I think there is a spring season. I think the spring season to plant those seeds, honestly, is when they're in the age range of 8 to 10, 3rd grade to 5th grade. Preferably, in my opinion, really starting closer to 3rd grade, I think that's the time to start exposing children to shul. I think, honestly, when children are exposed to shul when they're 4 and 5, and they're coming to shul with their comic books and their snacks and all of those things, ultimately, it's like planting seeds in the winter. It's detrimental to the child. Because then they view shul as this playgroup. Shul should be understood as a place that is serious and valuable and important, not overbearing and gloomy, but in a positive way, they should understand this is your opportunity to talk to a Kadosh Baruch Hu. You know, in the older Sfarim, you go back 200 years, they always talk about, you know, all the Mashalim talk about going before a king. We don't have that today. Unfortunately, when you talk about elections and prominent positions nowadays, it's unfortunately the butt of a joke. It's sad. But the reality is that there are visions we could give our children to help them understand the value of coming to shul. And what's so unique about this age of 8 to 10? Well, if you think about what they're doing in school, well, this is a time where their kriya is really starting to develop. Their understanding of what they're saying, some of the shirashim they're able to start to recognize. Right? There's so many aspects that we can provide them. But let me tell you the number one nakuda. The number one nakuda is this is also the time where when they walk to shul, they'll actually grab your hand and hold your hand. By the time they're 12, 13, and 14, you are past. You are done. They're done with you. They're not thinking about you. They're not interested in you. It's their peers. But when people bring their child to shul for the first time in sixth grade, we lost everything at that point in time. So look at that age, look at that opportunity. And my feeling in particular is when we introduce our children to davening, it should be done incrementally. They shouldn't just all of a sudden one day come to shul for every part of davening. In my house, our practice is that in third grade, we bring our boys, my daughter is only in first grade right now, right? We bring our boys to shul Shabbos Mincha. Why? Why Shabbos Mincha? Well, if you think about it, Shabbos Mincha is a snapshot of everything. Because you have a Shmoneh Esrei, you have a Chazaras HaShatz, you have Kriyas HaTorah, you have Kaddish, you have Kedusha, you have every important aspect of davening in about 20 minutes. You expose them. Think about that visual learner. Think about that kinesthetic learner, that child who's in shul, and all of a sudden, they see, oh, everyone's going up a leg, yes. That's where they start to learn. That's when they start to get exposed. They're going to watch your every step. And all of those things are valuable. At that age, they have the opportunity. Shabbos Mincha, I've always found to be the right place, the right time to expose children to shul. But what happens if you can't? Sorry. We skipped over this for a second. Let me go back for a second. But what about middle schoolers or high schoolers? So I'm going to say something which is not so popular. But having a teen minion may not be the best thing. And if you've ever been to a teen minion, you'll understand what I'm talking about. Because often in a teen minion, you have situations where, what time do they show up? How long do they stay? And what are they doing while they're there? The most important thing for children, as I've said a number of times, is your presence, is being with you. If you start young enough, if you start at that age where they're interested in you, want to be close to you, then you have an opportunity by the time they're in high school to still have that connectivity. But what happens if you can't? What happens if you have little children at home and your daughter, who's now in middle school, wherever she is, not going to be able to stand next to her father, and then what do you do? That's where the community comes in. Find a role model. Find a neighbor who is a daughter who is in high school that she can stand with her in shul. Right? It's all about partnership. It's all about a community. Whether it's a neighbor who has older children and she's able to go to shul for the whole time, or it's a high school student that you know from the community that you can rely on, there are people that you can go to help your children grow and to develop and give them that opportunity. And finally, be mindful of where you daven. Because if you go to a shul where 1, 2, 3 is a dip through everything, it's going to be hard for kids to understand the value of davening when everyone's just trying to get out. I once davened in a minyan where it's a minyan in someone's house. And mincha took about 5 minutes. And I went to the owner of the house, who I know very well, and I said, please do me a favor. Don't let any of my students daven here. Why? Because if any minyan in any davening goes through that quickly, teach children that you want to get it over with. The goal here is to help the children connect. Connectivity takes time. We want to create opportunities for them to truly thrive. So I want to end with one of the most famous questions that exists in this world. And I think this is an important piece to help us really summarize the topic of connectivity and allowing our children to grow on religious levels. So they asked the question, which came first, the chicken or the egg? So we know the answer. The answer is the chicken. The chicken came first, because when HaKadosh Baruch Hu created everything, he created everything as adults. So what about Adam and Chava? How old were they? So I think the answer for Adam and Chava is Adam and Chava must have been about 20 years old. How do we know that? We know that from their punishment. Their punishment was Misa. And we see from the door in Midbar that only those people who were over the age of 20 were punished with death, right? Those who were younger were allowed and actually were able to enter Eretz Yisrael. So if Adam and Chava, who we know were perfect, were complete, were 20 years old, that gives us tremendous insight of when we're dealing with our children. Because if 100% is 20 years old, then when you're dealing with a 10-year-old, you're dealing with someone who's only 50% done. When you're dealing with a 5-year-old, you're talking about 1/4, 25%. And you can use another mushel in terms of like baking a cake, right? There's so many different ingredients, whether it's eggs, it's flour, it's water, whatever you're putting into sugar. There's so many different ingredients. And developmentally, we have to look at our children that way. It's our responsibility to put ingredients into our children. But we have to understand one thing. Some children may get the eggs earlier than others. Some children may get the water before the eggs or the flour before the sugar. But it's our responsibility to watch our children and see where they are developmentally and to give them those ingredients and make sure that they have all those ingredients before we mix the batter and eventually put it in the pan and put it in the oven. I always find it interesting that Chazal tell us that a person should get married when they're 18. Why? Because ultimately what we're doing is we're telling them, you're not complete, and the person that you'll eventually meet and marry will help you complete yourself. Maybe nowadays we're behind the eight ball, so therefore people are getting married later. But it's a very, very important piece. I think it's incredible that nowadays so many children are going to Eretz Yisrael when they're 18 years old. Once again, they're not complete, they're not set. So that's something we have to think about when we're dealing with our children is we're dealing with products that are not complete. And it's our responsibility to help them grow and to develop and to help them reach that next level. Sometimes we have to put a little bit more sugar in. Sometimes we have to put a few more eggs in. Sometimes we have to measure that flour very carefully. But understand that it comes in stages. It doesn't happen all at once. And as parents, sometimes we look at that 12-year-old and we get so frustrated, or that 14-year-old and we get so frustrated. Well, 12-year-old's 60% done. A 14-year-old's 70% done. Would you be happy to get a 70 or a 60 on a test? Certainly not. So we have to think about that with our children and say, hold on, there's still room to grow. What are we missing? What ingredients do we still need to put in? It's not too late. How do we do that? Well, go back to what we were saying before about being proactive. Speak to your spouse. Speak to the teachers. Watch your children. Look at their peers. Speak to your peers. Put all of those things together. Because at the end of the day, when we're raising our children, the sky's the limit. We just have to make sure that we first understand our children. And then, once we understand our children, then we can set them on a path to success and connectivity. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Pleasure. Yeah. Sure. You know what? Give me your email address.
Yeah.
Because I think 100% for you. 100% here. You know what? I'll write down your email address on here. Okay.
Better if I give you a card or?
Either one's fine.
Beautiful.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. Yes, perfect. Perfect.
Okay,
thank you.
Thank you so much. It's beautiful.
Thank you so much.
Always a pleasure.
Nice to meet you again. Be well. I'll talk to you.
I encouraged my parents to get together. They actually did it on their own.
Yep.
And they got together at someone's house. Thank you.
Nice to
meet
you.
And as a group, they decided that they were in fourth grade and they weren't going to give their children cell phones.
Everybody just kept
it. And so what iPods, something like that, but they stayed away from that device until the children were in middle school. So by the time the kids got to middle school, then they honestly started to break down. But I felt like it was at a point where things were starting to trend younger and younger and younger. I was like, this is insane. So there was at the time, I think it was only a few, but I felt like, okay, since there's a few can be eventually turned into many. So let's meet with them. Let's have a conversation with them. And I felt it was extremely beneficial. Because it takes the pressure off of, the school said we have to do this. No, this is what we want to do. This is meaningful for us.
Be meant for something like Shabbos clothes, where you like say, like, I guess, depending on the community, if you have a mix of worship, would be based on standards.
Right.
Would there be a negative if a parent or like a parent decided they want to try to set a higher standard?
No, usually not. Usually not, because it is all grounded with in the concept of Kavod Shabbos. So if you want to enhance that, great. But I mean, it's about dealing with the baseline and understanding, like, what's bottom line. What are we going to tolerate here? Yeah.
All
right,
nice meeting
you.
Steve Wilson.
Oh, thank you. Hello, how are you? Sure. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
I think more parents need this.
Right. Oh, yeah.